You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek, host of Horses in the Morning.
And I'm Lily Bisson from Gallop for Life, and you are listening to a special episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, May 18th, episode 3952 by Worm Flooring. Good morning, Horse World.
Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. As you know, we are off on our Horse Lovers Cruise, so we put all these special episodes together for you. And I am very excited about two of the episodes we put together while we're away. And the reason I'm excited is you all know that I had cancer a while back. Everybody listening to the show knows that. So, dealing with cancer and helping people who have it and their families and things like that has a special place in my heart. Well, actually, I've known Lily for a long time, but she also had a battle with cancer. We're both still here after 5 years for you, Lily.
Actually, I am just around a 2.5 year mark.
I got you beat.
So you sure do. I'm so proud of you.
You're catching up.
That's a number I'm happy for you to take that honor.
And you know, we'll talk about that a little bit with one of our guests, that 5 year mark and why it's so special to all of us. So I'm so happy to have you here. Thank you for filling in for a couple of episodes while we're gone. We had you on the show not too long ago talking about Gallop for Life, but for those that didn't hear it, can you kind of give us a brief synopsis of what it is?
Thanks a lot, Glenn, and thanks again for having me on the show. I'm, very passionate about this topic and helping to advocate, as I know you are as well, from sharing your story with your listeners. And I'm so privileged to share my story and then share the stories of these other women that we have on your show today. Gallop for Life is a nonprofit 501c3 that I started when I was battling cancer. I was finding that some of these support groups didn't quite meet my needs, and I found it difficult to relate to some of the support groups that I was in. So I decided to start my own support group, and it involved horses. So we had this common denominator of having horses or a connection to the horse world, and we also had this unfortunate common connection of cancer. So with Gallop for Life, we have a support group that's over 550-ish women from around the United States and the world. We have some representatives from Canada and England in our breast cancer support group. And then we have this larger nonprofit. We send gift baskets to newly diagnosed women. And I'm so pleased to say that we have just launched our financial subsidy program, which is helping to offset the cost of cancer treatment for individuals who are battling cancer in the horse community.
That's amazing. Now, is it only breast cancer or is it open for any cancer?
Yeah, great question. So our support group is just equestrians with breast cancer, but the larger nonprofit of Gallop for Life supports individuals, men and women in the horse world who are receiving active treatment and going through their cancer journey. Any type of cancer.
And what are you hoping to do? Now, we have two episodes that we're going to be doing here in May while we're gone, and we're going to be meeting other people who also have battled cancer or still battling cancer and talk about their journeys. But what are you hoping to gain by doing these episodes? What's the message?
Well, I think my first and strongest message is just awareness and advocacy of early detection, making sure you're participating in all of your cancer screenings. That's first and foremost. Second to that is, sharing that you're not alone in your journey, or if you know that there's somebody in your barn or somebody that you know, or if you are going through this yourself, again, you're not alone. You have an entire network and team behind you that are cheering for you. And so we want to help support you. And also to listeners who may, although I think all of us have been touched by cancer in some way, that there is something that you can do to help. And that's, you could host your own schooling show. You could host your own trail ride. You could coordinate with a larger event. You know, maybe there's a Grand Prix that you work with, you volunteer for, and help us in raising funds to support these programs that unfortunately, again, cost quite a lot of money to help support these subsidies and support people from all over the community. So we want to continue to raise money and raise awareness.
And how can people find all of the information?
Again, great question, Glenn. It's almost like you do this for a living.
So, I've done a few.
You've done a few. So we have a website. It's gallupforlife.org. We also have a presence on Facebook. And then again, we have that support group for breast cancer equestrians on Facebook. So people can find us on the website. They can donate on the website. And if you would like to host an event or would like to liaise with us in how we can help support your event, you can reach out to me at info@gallupforlife.org. And we'd love to hear from you.
You know, there's people in the world that go through tough stuff, you know, cancer's tough stuff. And then there's people who go through tough stuff like cancer and then turn it around and do something amazing with it. And that's you.
Oh,
so, I mean, it is. It's a lot of work. Just starting a nonprofit is a year's worth of hassle. So, you know, it's not easy. And, you know, you've put a lot of time and effort into this in addition to having a real job so you can actually pay the bills.
Yeah, I sure do. Well, you know, a lot of that, I've had some support along the way, obviously. Again, I think behind every strong horsewoman or horseman, there are a good group of people helping to move you forward. So, you know, I've had some great friends and a supportive spouse who have helped set up my booth early in the morning, helped me, you know, some of these, I did a fox hunting charity ride. And so through the generosity of a lot of supporters, this has all been possible and into turning it into something really positive. And I do think you can look at these things in different ways, and a positive attitude really does help in getting through this. So I'm really grateful to be able to pay it forward and make sure that the next person doesn't have to do this alone.
And the other message I think we want to get across too is don't put off getting your mammograms. If you see anything that's suspicious or feel anything that's suspicious, get it done. And then also colonoscopies for that matter. You know, colon cancer now is becoming the leading cancer for people under 50. So it's, you know, it's growing in the younger population. There's the Cologuard test now that you could do at home, you can get from your doctor. So it's not necessarily, you know, if you're in a low risk group, but you're concerned for some reason, see your doctor. But, you know, that's the other message we want to get across is don't ignore the symptoms. Early detection is the best. And we were both lucky that way.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Again, we take care of our horses. We have the vets out. We have Cairo. We have PEMF. We do all of these things for our horses. And yet sometimes we don't go to the doctor.
The
sometimes, you know, we glorify this grind. We break bones. We get back on. We ignore things. We, you know, work through colds, pneumonia, flu, COVID, all of these things without resting and taking care of our bodies. And I'm not going to be under any illusion that I'm going to change that mentality within the horse world, but I am going to put a plug for mammograms and colonoscopies. They are definitely our best defense on these insidious diseases. And, you know, the poop in a box, Glenn, I mean, it's my husband did it and I carried it over to the UPS store.
Yeah. Jennifer just did it too. It's the thought is just weird.
It is weird, but you know, we've got this technology now, so we should, although that seems a little antiquated. We should definitely use it.
That's for sure. Well, we are going to get to our first guest here in a minute. We have some sponsors. We have two sponsors today. I'm going to put them right now so that we're not interrupted the rest of the show, so that we can do the rest of the show without interruption. So let's do that now. And we'll come back and Lily will tell us who our first guest is.
Great. Thanks, sponsors.
Ditch the mats and upgrade to Wyrm Flooring Systems. Is the constant struggle with heavy rubber mats getting you down? Do you crave a more durable, easy-to-clean flooring solution for your trailer, barn, or any space, commercial or residential? Worm Flooring Systems solves your problems. Say goodbye to rubber mats and say hello to Worm Flooring Systems. No more liquid seeping through to the wood or aluminum frame. Slip-resistant grip that provides a cushion comfort, extremely durable, built to last and withstand heavy machinery and constant use. Plus, it helps insulate the trailer. Worm Flooring Systems, the perfect choice for applications all over your horse property. We eliminate rubber mats. Visit wormflooring.com to find a dealer near you.
Tired of flies bugging your barn? Kill flies before they hatch with Fly Predators, nature's fly-fighting secret that can kill as many as 70,000 flies in a single delivery. Start early and enjoy fewer flies all season. Learn more at spalding-labs.com.
So who's first up today? We're going to have one guest today and one guest in the next episode. So who do you have?
Okay, our first guest is Megan, and I know Megan through our support group, and I don't know her full story, so I'm really looking forward to learning more about Megan and having her share her story with us. Hi, good morning, Megan. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I wonder if you could give us a little bit of your story. So I understand you've been a rider for 45 years and you're also an instructor for 25 years.
Yeah. I like to tell everybody that I've been falling off horses since before I was born. I think my dad was a casual recreational rider, and he and my mom, I think, used to go, you know, I take little hacks, trail rides here and there. And I think she took a spill when she was pregnant with me. So I have been, I've been on horseback since I was very young. And it's one of those things where you just kind of know where you're supposed to be in life. And I took a really long path to get here, but I'm doing everything that I have ever wanted. I'm an instructor. I teach dressage and the fundamentals of English riding. And I also am a nonprofit director, and we help kids with special needs, as well as women surviving sex trafficking.
That's just incredible. I want to go back there, but you started the nonprofit after you were diagnosed with breast cancer?
I did. I went into the nonprofit sector for essentially through a couple different nonprofits that offered riding for children with special needs and adults with special needs. I had been working in the human services field with people with developmental disabilities primarily, and then I switched into therapeutic riding in around 2012. And from there, then I went on to be the executive director of a nonprofit out of state. And then in 2020, I bought my farm in Michigan. And the goal was, I knew I wanted to be closer to my family. My folks live in Michigan, and so I had been shopping for a farm in the Michigan area, because anything in Michigan was going to be closer than a 15-hour drive to the southern Midwest where I had been living. And bought my place up here. It needed a lot of love. I was pretty run down when I purchased it. So took a couple years to kind of, you know, fix things up and make improvements. And during that period of time, we were approached by a nonprofit that supports women escaping trafficking. And they asked about bringing the group of ladies out here. And the answer was, of course, absolutely. So starting in 2021, we have been doing that pro bono. And then the irony being, after kind of getting the business up and running and the farm business up and running and the lesson program going, I went for my very first ever screening mammogram. And we have no history of breast cancer in my family. I had no reason to think at 42 that was even a possibility, but went for my first screening mammogram and ended up learning via the text message that my results were available on my portal.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I got to read it, that it was BI-RADS Category 5, that I was 95% certain of malignancy. So that's kind of when the
Okay, that's dropped. A hell of a way to learn it, by the way.
Well, you know, super fun. It was really nice. I also got dumped via text message by the guy I'd been dating for a year, like 4 days earlier. It was a rough week. Lots of bad news coming on my phone that week.
No. Again, they always say, like, you know, they don't give us more than we can handle, but also, like, do I have to handle both of these things at the same time, right? Like, you know, a little buffer.
I think that's where I differ a little in my mentality, is that, like, I don't think there's such thing as, like, we're never given more than we can handle. I think we're given enough that we lean into our faith, or that we lean into the things that are important to us, that we stop thinking we can do it all on our own.
Yeah.
So I got to do the fun breast cancer thing, and I kind of thought, you know, if I'm going to be here, I better start living my purpose. So I was diagnosed in May of 2023, had a double mastectomy September 1st of 2023. And by April 2024, I had founded the nonprofit. And in the period of time from 2021 through 2025, we grew from about 40 units a year to nearly 300 units a year of services provided at no cost. So it's really kind of allowed me to really hone in on the things that are important to me. The barn has always been my safe space. I was one of those kids that, you know, like a lot of us, didn't fit in school and was gawky and weird, and I still am. So for me, the horses were always where I felt safe, where I felt most like myself. And I really love that now I have really honed in on making a facility and an environment, creating an environment where I get to share that with other people.
Yeah, that's so special. And, you know, I think you and I actually we shared a similar diagnosis, mm-hmm. and we opted for a similar treatment plan with a double mastectomy. And, you know, I'm not sure how you came to your decision, but obviously having, you know, early stage, mm-hmm. I was presented with, you know, a lumpectomy or a mastectomy option. And I decided, you know what, that's fine. I'm just going to take them both off.
Yes.
But that might have been the way that you came to yours as well, is it?
Yeah, you know, it really is. They offered and they were encouraging me towards the lumpectomy. And for me, I kind of thought, you know, I don't want this hanging over my head. And the reality is, it still kind of does. I mean, all of us, when we have this diagnosis, there's always that little voice, I think, in the back of our head where we're thinking, what if?
Oh, and you know, every stomach ache is cancer, you know?
Right? Yep. Yeah.
You get heartburn, it's cancer.
Is this it? Yeah. It's just kind of.
So Megan, Glenn is also a cancer survivor. We all share this.
I wanted to bring it up too, because I think this is a good time to do it. You know, two things. I had colon cancer. So colon cancer is becoming, it used to be the men's disease, and now it's 50-50. You know, people still don't realize that women are 50% of colon cancer patients, and they're much, much younger now.
It seems to be a lot more prevalent today than it used to be, right?
30s is the fastest growing segment of colon cancer.
Wow.
And then, the thing you look for colon cancer in your 30s is blood in the stool. That's your first indication, because you're not going getting a colonoscopy at 30.
Yeah.
But the other thing too is breast cancer. A lot of people don't realize men get breast cancer, and a lot of men get breast cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, but many people don't realize that.
Yeah.
No, and with both of those cancers, both breast and colon cancer, you know, early detection is our best chance of surviving all of these cancers, right? So don't neglect your body. Listen to your body. You know, if you have blood in your stool, definitely go talk to the doctor about it. And, you know, if you're of average screening age, or if you do have history in your family, definitely go, you know, get checked out with one of the routine screenings. But so I have to ask, Megan, like, so who, while you were recovering from your mastectomy, who did the barn for you?
Oh my gosh. I have the most fantastic group of people here. I've been really blessed with the farm family out here. I have a gal that has worked for me part-time for about 3.5 years now. So she jumped in, but also a lot of my students, boarders, my folks, friends, I felt so supported. And, you know, it's something I take really seriously. I have a group of young riders here. I'm a big fan of the barn rat mentality. My goal is to help raise young horsemen and horsewomen. So if kids want to be out here and they want to be riding and they want to be working and they want to earn those opportunities, I'm all for it. But I want the kids to be able to come here and be here. I'm single. I live here alone. So I love having the farm family here and the support here with the students and the families. And I want to be able to give back to them too. So I think over the years, it's been really eye-opening to me looking at the people that I get to be surrounded by, and I'm so impressed with them. I have a group of teenage girls that just are phenomenal. Like, they know how to take vitals. They know what's going, if there's something not quite right with one of the horses, they know what to do. They can wrap legs, you know, they can do basic first aid. And that was such a big peace of mind when I was laid up. Although, I mean, I'll be honest, my surgery was on a Friday afternoon, and I got home around midnight and I was in the barn by 8 o'clock in the morning the next morning.
Typical horse person.
Yeah, why wouldn't I be? You know, I live here. So
I broke my leg. I was riding 2 days later. So.
not quite, but almost. But no, I guess, you know, I had some of the teenage girls were out here, you know, the next day and were doing stuff at the farm. And it just gave me such peace of mind and such joy that I get to be with these great people, these amazing kiddos. I had a boarder who was in the medical field, and she came by and helped check my dressings and my bandages. Like, I wouldn't have been able to do it without the people that I have in the community. So I'm very, very lucky in that regard.
Thank you so much for sharing. So, I mean, so Glenn has a lot of listeners, and if they know somebody, or when they know somebody, it's not a matter of sort of if, it's just when,
yes.
Right? When they know of somebody in their barn, whether it's the barn owner like you, or if it's another boarder, or if it's somebody that they ride with on a regular basis, do you have any advice for what they could do to help support that person, and how you might suggest they help that person?
You know, it's such a personal thing, because everybody values support in different ways. What might be meaningful to me might not be meaningful to somebody else. You know, I'm not necessarily a person that needs somebody to come and give me a hug, but somebody else might find that really, really important. For me, it's just that people would pop in and just kind of sit in the trenches with me and not try to downplay anything, not try to be like, oh, well, it's so good you caught it early, and you know, and this kind of thing, like, that could sit there with me while I cried and just listen to me and be like, yeah, this sucks. This is terrible, you know, and just be there in that way. The little things, like, you know, sweeping a barn aisle, or, you know, scrubbing buckets and that kind of stuff, just took the pressure off a little bit. It made me feel like everything was under control at a time in my life when I didn't feel like much was in control at all. I had one of my students, she started basically like a meal plan for me. And she emailed it out to a whole bunch of our friends and contacts at the farm. And folks would just show up with, they could sign up for what day they wanted to bring a dinner. And it was something off my plate that I didn't have to worry
about.
That's
the best eating you probably had in a long time.
Yeah, yes, true. But yes, I mean, sometimes it's just the littlest things that makes such a big difference. And
I'm glad you guys brought this up, because it was on our topic to talk about anyway today. So I'm glad, Megan, you brought it up. And we wanted to talk about, and maybe you could help us with this, we wanted to talk about how people that know people with cancer, it's hard sometimes because you tend to pull away a bit. I know, Lily, you made a post about that early on in your treatment. And it does happen, so, because you don't know what to say, right? You're confused about what to say and what to do. And for me, it was just, I don't want to talk about cancer when you call me. Let's talk about other stuff. You know, that's the way it was for me. Don't feel like you have to comment on my cancer or any of that. For me, it was, oh, that sucks. Let's move on. You know, I don't know how you guys felt about that. Megan, it kind of sounds like you were in my boat.
I don't want somebody to like pity me or try to downplay it or anything like that. But at the same time, like, you know, if I'm having a bad day, just let me sit in the suck for a little bit. But like, if there's something that we can laugh about, by all means, like, let's laugh about it. Like, just because you carry this diagnosis doesn't mean it becomes your entire personality. You know, I still find, you know, the dark humor and the inappropriate things funny that I did before, you know? So I think that, yeah, you really kind of, I think the best thing you can do is, you know, ask the person, hey, I want to show up for you. What's the best way I can show up for you? You know, what does it look like for you?
And ignoring them is the worst option.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And at a time where you already feel again, like, you know, abandoned. I don't know what your experiences have been with the medical field in your diagnoses, Lily and Glenn. But I felt so just trashed by the doctors and by the medical team. I it's been so upsetting. And
you found out reading it.
Right.
On your my chart.
And, yeah.
You know, I'll tell
Surprise.
You, everybody is different in that respect too. I've spoken to people who I know who are in more rural communities, and actually they have received better healthcare. They were treated and diagnosed right away in person, same day. And that was not my experience. I didn't find out via the my chart text, but I did have somebody it was like before a holiday weekend and the doctors had all gone home and I got a FaceTime. Oh. And that's pretty cold too.
Yeah,
so, and yeah. And unfortunately, cancer is just so prevalent these days. You know, there are more and more people being diagnosed, fewer and fewer people in the healthcare community able to provide that kind of one-on-one bespoke care. You know, we all want to feel treated like we are special, and every one of us is special, but we do, especially when it comes to these sort of quote unquote common cancers like breast cancer, we get put in sort of, you know, a conveyor belt, right? And we're just a number. And I can totally understand how, you know, it does feel very cold and impersonal. So having, and it's hard to advocate, especially, you know, at 42, it's the first time you've gone through something like this and nobody prepares you. There's no playbook, right? Or tutorial on how to navigate the American healthcare system with cancer.
On my end, I come from, and it's part of the reason why, you know, on the nonprofit end, why I find it valuable to do the work with people who have experienced trauma. I've gone through a lot of things myself where I didn't always feel that I was respected or that my body or my choices were respected. So where it became challenging on my end was I felt that the doctors, when I made a decision about my care and what I wanted to happen to my body, that was downplayed. And that was a really tough pill to swallow. I made the decision to go flat after my double mastectomy. I didn't do implants. The more I learned about it, I didn't want to have to do expanders and then a revision and have to change out the implants every 10 to 15 years. I wanted kind of a one and done type of surgery. Excuse me. So when I opted to go flat, I met with the plastic surgeon who I had begun to trust. He and I had talked about what I wanted done. And when I made the decision to go flat, he and I met again. And it was a couple days before my surgery when I said, you know, I've learned about the term aesthetic flat closure. I want an aesthetic flat closure. And I want to make sure that if I change my mind in the future, if 10 years from now, if a year from now, whatever, if I decide I want to do implants or a deep flap or a lap flap, can I change my mind in the future? And he said, absolutely. And I said, okay, then I want to do an aesthetic flat closure for sure. I want a smooth closure. I want to look seamless. And essentially it was because as a business owner, as a single person, I need to get back to life as soon as possible. If I don't work, I can't pay my bills. So being laid up and having a, you know, a deep flap, which is a much more involved surgery, it's like a 15-hour surgery and the recovery time is 5 months or so, like that just wasn't something I could do. So he assured me, absolutely, we can give you the aesthetic flap closure. That's not a problem. And I learned 12 days after my surgery, because I'd had some problems with the closure and the incisions and things just didn't seem right. And I was reaching out to the doctors and asking, you know, again, via my chart and via your portal, you know, sending emails, hey, this is what I'm seeing, you know, what's going on. So I finally point blank asked the plastic surgeon's office, hey, I checked the OR notes and I don't see what time you arrived and I haven't seen your notes, but I'm experiencing these issues with my closure. When are you going to upload your notes or what happened here? Like, who did my closure? And that's when I learned my plastic surgeon never came. And he basically decided I would change my mind later and just let the general surgeon close me. And the general surgeon didn't even close me. He let, it's a teaching hospital, so he let an ENT resident close me on one side and another resident close me on the other side.
Oh my God. And
I'm disfigured as a result. And you know, I need to be able to trust who's going to handle my body when I'm unconscious.
Wow.
And that didn't happen. So what I've really learned from all of this and subsequently meeting with plastic surgeons afterwards to look at my chest and look at what we can do to fix it, the comments were always, I actually had a doctor tell me, well, why wouldn't you want breasts? You're young and you're pretty. And I looked at him and said, and neither of those things are predicated on whether or not I have breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Like at this point, they're ornaments. They're colder than the rest of your body. There's no blood flow if you do an implant. They're ornaments for somebody else to look at me and think I'm normal. And I'm okay being flat. I'm fine with my body. So I didn't like that this mentality is, we're going to try to make you, quote, look normal, when that's not their choice. It's mine. So being able to advocate for yourself is something that's a hill I will die on, is that if you're a person who's going through this and maybe you don't have family, maybe you don't have a spouse or a partner that you can lean on, reach out, you know, reach out to somebody that you can trust, reach out to me. I will go to appointments with you. I will sit with you and advocate for you because this shouldn't happen. Medical professionals should listen to and respect the wishes of the patients that they're serving.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I'm so sorry that mm-hmm. happened to you. That is not okay.
It happens so much more often than it should.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm not a unique case. I know there's plenty of women out there that weren't treated with the dignity and respect that their bodies deserved.
Yeah. We have a different journey in that respect. And I got a telephone call from the plastic surgeon the night before the surgery. And he said, I don't have any notes on what you want for your implants. I was having a direct to implant without expanders during my mastectomy. But mm-hmm. that was a process I couldn't engage in because I just couldn't, I was focused on the cancer part. So I just mm-hmm. didn't want to be flat, but I didn't have any idea about what I wanted. So I just told him, dealer's choice, Megan. I just woke up, surprised.
Oh my God, she had a lot more faith in hers than you did in yours.
But, you know, anyway, thankfully I did not wake up like Dolly Parton, which I guess was a small risk when you have a male plastic surgeon. But anyway, so yeah, these things happen, you know, but, and they're not okay. And I thank you for raising that part of the journey, because again, sometimes it's not just about the cancer, it's about the lasting impact, right, of the way that you look at yourself in the mirror. So but anyway, at least you don't have to worry about anything, you know, bouncing during the sitting trot.
Can I tell you how wild it is? Okay, so I'm not a tiny girl. I'm not a little wafer. I am 5'11" and I'm athletically built and curvy. And prior to surgery, I was at like a 36, 38 double D and very busty and well-balanced. And also I carry a lot in my hip. Since going flat, my balance is so different.
I'm
like,
sure.
Because now I'm like base heavy. I'm hip and thigh heavy and learning to reposition myself riding without that hanging on the front of me. It's been a wild experience. My body doesn't move the same. So I don't know.
Megan,
crazy.
I do. There's a question that's burning for me. So I see you provided this picture of yourself on your Dutch warm blood cross. And I don't know if there is a connection to your horse's breeding with the stallion Simpatico. Is he bred that way?
He's like the Art Deco line of things. His dad was state of the art.
I raised that because fun fact, there are several of us with connections to those spotted warm bloods in the breast cancer support group. I don't know what the common denominator is with spotted warm bloods and breast cancer, but the breeder and the woman that actually bred my horse and the breeder of Simpatico are all in our support group. I don't know if you knew that, but
it's amazing.
Anyway,
I love it. It happened on accident. I didn't think I was going to have a Pinto half Arab Dutch cross. I went to a mentor of mine who is just, he's an incredible, incredible rider, an incredible human being. His name's Christian Garvig, and he's brilliant. I went to him and said, you know, I think I'd like to purchase something. Most of my horses to this day, almost everything's a rescue. I try to, you know, see potential in horses that maybe other people have given up on. So I have a farm full of rescues, and that's what we participate with our lessons and our therapeutic program with. And I love it. But I thought, you know, I'd like a horse that I can kind of progress with and challenge myself a little bit more. So I think I'm actually going to like buy a horse, right? So Christian at the time was at a farm in Virginia, and he said, why don't you come out and just ride a bunch of the horses here on the farm? You know, nothing that you need to buy from us, but I want to see what can you deal with? What can you not deal with? What do you like? What do you not like? Let's hone this down, and then I can keep my eyes open for you. And I rode this charming, opinionated, lovely Pinto, and I was not expecting to be buying a half Arab, but I just felt like when I sat in the saddle, and this is going back to like 2018, I just felt like home, I guess. So I bought him, and he is my best buddy. I just adore him. He is quirky. He is so expressive. And we just have a ton of fun. And recently, the end of August of last year, his full brother came to live at my property as well. And his full brother is, has gone Grand Prix, but did, I think he won nationals at like third, fourth, Pre-St. George. He's very, very talented, but he was ready for a step down. So he lives here now at the farm. So I've got the two brothers, these two beautiful Pinto Dutch horses that I just never even in my wildest dreams would I have thought I would have such cool horses. So it's really neat.
So Megan, did you have insurance this whole time?
I did. I was fortunate. Moving back to Michigan and opening a business, that was actually one of the first things on my agenda was I need to make sure I carry medical insurance. So I was able to purchase through the marketplace.
Yeah, and me too.
That's so great. It's nice. And I, you know, like a lot of barns, you're month to month, you're breaking even if you're lucky. So I was lucky to get a great plan with great coverage for a reasonable price, which has been a godsend because I cannot imagine going through any of this uninsured. I would encourage anybody to make sure just check the marketplace, see what you're eligible for. It's been huge.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're doing at Gallop for Life is we have just launched our subsidy program where we're able to offer some subsidies to individuals who are going through active treatment and need financial assistance in covering their expenses during this time, whether or not they have no insurance or if they're underinsured or, you know, just again to offset the cost of the mounting copay bills. I think even with insurance, right, it's still a financial burden. I did cold capping, which was not covered by insurance. And, you know, I think that ended up being, you know, a few thousand dollars.
Well, plus deductibles today in insurance policies are $10,000, you know, it's
right. Yeah. Exactly. So that is something that through our fundraising efforts, we're now able to offer those subsidies and really make an impactful difference in some people's lives. So
that's a huge blessing. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you know of anybody who's going through it, any listeners who are listening today, encourage them to apply for our financial aid package on our website, gallupforlife.org. And again, like I said, whether or not you own a farm or you're a casual trail rider, I am just encouraging people to get involved with the charity as much as they can. Anybody can host their own event. And again, Megan, you're also a 501c3 president. So you know how, you know, we're all just on the kindness of strangers and donations running this organization. So we really appreciate everything we can get.
So as a person on the other side of this, who's kind of come through the breast cancer journey, people in my position, how do we get involved? So if I'm not necessarily someone that needs assistance, how can I get involved with Gallup for Life to promote your mission?
Great question. Numero uno, we love a like and follow on social media. You know, that's one of our great ways for to get visibility. So anybody can do that. And then, like I said, if people want to host their own, there is only one of me, and unfortunately, I do have a full-time day job, so I can't do this full-time. But so we're hoping to set up like chapters. So I love that you're in the Midwest. But again, right now, this is all started as a grassroots movement, right? So people are able to, you know, plan their own, you know, group trail ride event with donations to Gallup for Life,
okay,
horse shows, schooling shows, all the way up to, you know, if you have a connection with the Grand Prix, we would love to have something with a show of any level. And then, I mean, you know, like you mentioned about, you know, helping to advocate for one another, I think one of our long-term stretch goals is to coordinate that kind of a volunteer program with individuals who are diagnosed, mm-hmm, if they need an advocate, or if a woman needs help running their barn, if they don't have a great group of barn people, barn rats, mm-hmm, like you do, how do we connect volunteers? So we are kind of in the planning stages of having that in place to connect volunteers from across the country. But again, for now, we're just looking at raising these fundraising efforts and sharing us on social media, which is such a powerful platform for awareness.
Can people make donations through the website as well?
They sure can. Gallupforlife.org. We accept credit card payments. We have Venmo and PayPal. Just stepping into the 21st century. So we'll get Zelle here pretty soon too, but we're trying to make it as easy as possible for everybody who wants to make a donation.
Perfect.
And if you prefer checks, you can send me an email and I will send you the address for that too.
And we didn't ask Megan to ask any of those questions, but that was perfect.
They were great. Thank you so much. I didn't even plan the questions. Thank you, Megan. Spoken like a true nonprofit champion.
So the farm that I own is called Oak Lane Equestrian, and we're in Michigan. And the nonprofit end of things is called Connections, and that's CONNEQTIONS.org.
Oh, I love that. That's a great.
Thank you. So, we're small but mighty.
Obviously, you're doing great work too. So thank you for doing what you do. We've talked to a lot of people who have organizations like yours, and it's selfless because, again, you talked about Barnes not making any money. Well, nonprofit, it's in the name. So so thank you for your selfless work doing that as well. Megan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This is really fun.
Well, she was absolutely fascinating. And another one, you two could be soul sisters. You really could. Because, I mean, she did the same thing you did. She came out of a bad situation and went and started a nonprofit and did her thing, right? So I think it's absolutely cool what you both did. You really are soul sisters.
I love it. I just love hearing other people's journeys and learning from them. And again, like you said, taking something that's really terrible and making something really positive out of it. There's a joy in resistance. So I love it.
And hope. I think that the three of us show that there can be hope. So when you hear those three words, you have cancer, don't give up hope. All right. There's hope. There's medicine now that is amazing. And, you know, a lot of people are in the situation the three of us are in, where we're still here. So that's the other message I would say. I belong to a men's cancer group on Facebook. And it's different in there, I think, than your group, because it is men, number one. It's all kinds of cancer, but they have a rule in there that you can say whatever you want. You can, you know, whatever you're feeling that day or whatever help you need, you can say it. And they do. They're very candid, as men are, especially around other men. But one of the things that they try and do for each other is give hope, you know, and, but yet not, you know, not in a condescending way, you know. Yeah. I think anybody that's been through cancer knows what I'm talking about right now, but they do it in a way that, you know, keep fighting till the end. And that's, you know, and then that's what they preach in there. And it is interesting how many, my good friend Lee had colon cancer. He's the one that did one of the largest cancer podcasts in the world. That's how I met him. Fought it for 11 years. He was given 6 months to live and lived 11 years. One of the coolest people, most positive people I know. And I met him after, you know, after his cancer had gotten worse, actually. So, but yet he did that show, talked to other people, tried to help other people. What a great guy. And he would say the same thing. Look, if I had given up, I wouldn't have had those 11 years. He married a new wife in those 11 years, and she was the best thing that ever happened. So,
oh, I love these stories, Glenn. I have somebody in my life who sadly passed away last year, Mary Hassel, and she was just incredible lover of life, right? And I think when you get this diagnosis, it really does put everything into perspective. But the way that somebody with cancer continues to fight for each day and finds that beauty of each day in life and doesn't take any of it for granted is a way that I encourage everybody to live their life with or without a cancer diagnosis, hopefully without.
Yeah.
But you don't wait for your diagnosis to hit you. You know, enjoy life as if you were, you know, you knew about your mortality.
We have a saying on the show that Jamie started a long time ago after her mom died, is we're all marching towards death, do it now.
Yeah, great. I love it.
So anyway, thanks for joining us. We'll have another great story for you next week. Lily, what is the website again where people can donate or help out?
Yes, it's gallupforlife.org.
I hope you enjoyed the chat we had today. We have many more new special episodes for you coming up, some one-on-ones, other fun stuff as well. Be sure to subscribe and tune in throughout the month. The Quarter Horse Show is up tomorrow. Be safe, everyone, and get your mammograms and colonoscopies now.
Thanks, Glenn.